This is the Lombardi Line
with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard on VSiN.
We welcome you in. It's another edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM from downtown Las Vegas at our Circa Sportsbook Studios. I'm Ben Wilson. It is not Mike Pritchard, but we had to have a Mike.
Yeah.
But we have Lombardi, Pritchard, and now Palm. Mike Palm, good to see you, man.
Very honored to be asked to sit in on the Lombardi Line. A lot of respect for Michael and been a guest on the show many times throughout the years. So let's have some fun.
Absolutely. And we're here at Circa. Mike, VP of Operations at the Circa D and Golden Gate. It has been quite the playoff stretch for you guys here at the book and a lot of line movement now into conference championship weekend, especially with this AFC game.
It's been a teaser central. I mean, these teasers, it's hard to lose a teaser, it seems like. You know, the only game last weekend that really wasn't a tease game was the Bills because, you know, the line sat at 5.5, didn't get to 6 till late. So that game wasn't teased much. The other three, you tease Dallas, you win. And then, of course, everybody had the teaser parlay on Saturday with the two favorites. And then this game's interesting, both games to me. As you heard a lot of bookmakers say throughout the course of the year, San Francisco Philly's going to be a pick. They're power rated about the same, even in, you know. But how could you make it a pick? Because you could tease either side to 7, you know, and you'd get hammered with Eagles teasers being at home. It's the same thing here when this Chiefs game, which, you know, we saw the line movement here. KC opens 1. Then it goes 1 the other way, then 1.5, 2, some plot spots, 2.5. We're still toggling between 1 and 1.5. Can it get to 3? I don't know, because then you can tease the home team to 7, up 7-10. So it's interesting. Of course, obviously, the big question mark is Pat Mahomes. Is there any chance he doesn't go? And then if he does go, how limited is he going to be?
Right. We'll continue our full breakdowns on both the conference championship games on the show today. No new news as far as the injury on Patrick Mahomes. We're not expecting to get much new news throughout the week with his high right ankle sprain. The news of the day, though, and this was pretty stunning, at least for people who paid attention to the odds all year, when the finalists come out, not any surprises on any of the major awards except Coach of the Year, where minus money closing favorite Nick Sirianni of the Philadelphia Eagles is not one of the three finalists, even though there was some reporting earlier to the contrary. NFL reported 5 different finalists, and it's still on the NFL website if you look right now, which is not true. There's only 3 finalists. The Associated Press released their 3, and Nick Sirianni is not one of them. How about that?
Maybe the NFL is trying to soften the blow to all these people that had the favorite in Sirianni, who I think from week 4 on was the favorite in this market.
Amazing.
A wire to wire. I always said if they could go 16-1 or 15-2, that this would be a combo of Hurts and Sirianni. Then, of course, Hurts gets hurt. Mahomes becomes the prohibitive favorite. I didn't think that he wouldn't make the top 3. I know Doug Peterson got some steam late, and obviously Shanahan having the rookie quarterback go undefeated. And then in a lot of people's corner, obviously, Brian Daboll, whose Giants overachieved for that roster.
Right. Brian Daboll, Doug Peterson, Kyle Shanahan. Those are the actual 3 finalists. It amazes me, though, Mike, how, and I get that, like, especially for us here at VSiN, where we're, you know, 24-hour betting network, you have to find different things to talk about. It's amazing me how every single season, though, we talk ourselves into these different narratives that are completely dependent on a panel of voters who oftentimes see the game completely differently than we as bettors do. And yet the betting markets are kind of seen as gospel in a sense, yet they really shouldn't be, right? If you look at how the history goes with this stuff.
I think the most consistent thing is the MVP voting that you can predict. But, you know, I fall victim to it. Not necessarily in the NFL, I don't get involved, but I love to make Cy Young futures in baseball, right? And then I have to rely on a group of writers who might not see things differently than I. And, of course, baseball driven by statistic, but what statistics are most important for the pitchers. It is pretty head-scratching that Sirianni didn't make the top 3 here.
Minus 200 before week 16 was a minus 175 closing favorite if we're going off the BetMGM numbers. Look, I've been a victim of this, too. Like having, you know, the case I always point to is Dak Prescott last season in the comeback player of the year market, where if you're trying to try to handicap media narrative, it's such a dangerous, slippery slope to go on. I remember last year betting Prescott at about minus 160. It was week 3, week 4, thinking, okay, the nation watched this guy in a primetime Fox window have his ankle essentially turn in a 45-degree direction. They're going to bet Prescott. That will be the vote for comeback player of the year. What happens? Prescott gets up to minus 2,000. A lot of books took that off the market. Joe Burrow had three great weeks at the end of the year, and it's Burrow who ends up winning. I'm not saying I was, you know, it wasn't a bad beat. Burrow probably deserved to win the award. It's just when you try to get into that mentality of handicapping voters, it is dangerous, and I would not recommend it.
I that's even a tougher one for me, Ben, because define comeback player of the year. You came back from sucking. You came back from an injury, right? I mean, what are you coming back from? So there's some of that uncertainty into that market as well.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey, who's one of the comeback player of the year finalists, he came back from getting traded?
He came back from a bad team to a good team.
Yeah, that's a great comeback story. You were able to get that trade. Geno Smith, the Seahawks quarterback, Saquon Barkley, Giants running back, the other comeback player of the year finalist. So it's just interesting to think about and going forward. Especially because, like I always say, when we're doing shows in July, it's, you know, you're going through every single prop imaginable on the NFL board trying to find some value. As much as you're going to want to talk yourself into these sexy coach of the year bets, and look, I knew a lot of people who loved O'Connell this year at 20-1. That was a good bet. Guy doesn't even come close to sniffing the award, so maybe tread carefully going forward
until you watch him call plays on third and fourth down.
You
know, when Amal and I had our show, we would go through and come up with our favorite prop for each team, right? And the head coach would always be in the market. But I always said to Amal, everybody's between 12 and 16 to 1, so how do you find the value there to me? Because basically everybody, you paint them with a brush, and there's a few guys more than 20 to 1, but do they have a reasonable shot? I think when you look at this, and it's very interesting, right? Because Dable, they really only went 2.5 games over their win total.
Mm-hmm.
Peterson, they went 3 games over their win total. So Shanahan, but boy, that's a loaded roster too. So I mean, I actually right now for Coach of the Year wouldn't be surprised at any of the three if they were named.
Right, it heard a lot of support late in the year on Dable, but again, this is also a regular season award too. You have to keep that in mind. Yeah, I looked at the opening odds that we get from BetMGM, and at least for this show, and what, almost half the coaches in the league were between 14 and 20 to 1. So, and nobody was longer. I mean, the longest guy on the board was, the longest guys were Mike McCarthy, Matt Rhule, Arthur Smith, and Lovie Smith at 40 to 1. Those are the longest guys.
And rightfully so, I guess.
Probably, right? Rightly so at the end of the day. So that, at least that was a big piece of news for today, at least as we run through the finalists for the other. It's not a surprise to see these. Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Justin Jefferson, your offensive player of the year finalists, Nick Bosa, Micah Parsons, Chris Jones, defensive player of the year finalists, and then the MVP, which is it's felt, Mike, to be decided for some time. Patrick Mahomes closes a giant minus money favorite. He, Jalen Hurts, Justin Jefferson, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, all the MVP finalists. And it will also have the similar thing, too. Like, let's say Mahomes looks really shaky playing on one leg this week, and Joe Burrow looks awesome. And then you'll get the awards come out, and people say, well, how can you possibly have Mahomes the MVP? He was terrible in the playoffs. Well, it's not a playoff award, so keep that in mind, too.
Yeah, and you know who didn't make the top three and didn't make the top five and maybe didn't even make the top eight for head coach? Andy Reid. But, you know, all they did was let their number one receiver go, let the honey badger go, and go 6-0 in a division that many said was the greatest of all time. No one had ever seen a division like the AFC West. So kudos to Mahomes and Andy Reid, what they did this year in that division. And, you know, remember last year, they weren't the number one seed. It was the Tennessee Titans. So with arguably a lot more talented offensive team last year, they overachieved on offense this year. I thought Reid did a great job actually protecting Mahomes. And then, of course, he gets rolled up on last week. But they had leads in games. They ran the ball a lot this year. He shortened games. And then in the games where he needed it, like in Houston, he let Mahomes go, and he was, what, 27 for 27 to his top three targets. So I think well-deserved for Mahomes. If Hurts had remained healthy and played all the way through the year, it would have been an interesting vote.
Yeah, no question. But Eagles lose 3 times in the regular season. Andy Reid finished 100-1. At least on the odds. I told Michael Lombardi before Tennessee completely fell off a cliff, I thought it was insane to have Mike Vrabel at 100-1 when they were leading the division by 2 games, given the personnel. So to me, you get drastic differences of opinion, and that's sometimes reflected on the odds board. And we'll see this week. I mean, if there was ever a coach you would trust to come up with a game plan with a hobbled quarterback, given just the general creativity of Andy Reid. I mean, isn't it him with Kansas City taking on the Bengals this week?
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And, you know, he's had to use Henny in the playoffs before, as we've seen Mahomes get hurt, and Henny comes in for portions of games before, I think, Mahomes puts himself back in the game. I think they let him make those decisions, which I don't know if they're always the best, but
I said last week, you know, Doug Peterson is probably an advantage in most matchups in the AFC playoffs, but he really wasn't last week against Andy Reid. Reid's very good. If Andy Reid can figure out the last minute of a first half and how to score and not give the other team another possession, I wouldn't have any marks against him.
Yeah, that's the only thing. It right? holds him back, and you leave yourself scratching your head with a lot of the in-game decisions. But from just a game planning, scheming perspective, it's a guy you trust heading into this week. The other news of the day from the NFL, I bring this up just because I know you appreciate the going into the nerdiness of the NFL referees, but I found myself saying, really? Carl Cheffers? Super Bowl referee? Really? The guy whose crew led the entire league in penalties per game?
Well, what's ridiculous about it is he had it 2 years ago. This is out of rotation. I would have bet a lot of money that Bill Vinovich would have been the Super Bowl.
Too.
Of course,
yeah.
They both did. You know it's somebody that's going to come from the divisional round because they're not going to go back-to-back with the conference championship games. I think Vinovich has clearly been now widely agreed upon as the best official in the NFL. He overcame that no pass interference call in the Superdome a few years ago. It wasn't his call, but his crew's call. I think he has the most control of the games. And Vinovich every year among the least penalties called and enforced. And Cheffers every year in the top two in flags thrown and a number one in yards enforced again this year. Why do you want to take the chance that the referee and that crew is going to become the storyline in a Super Bowl?
He's been a bottom five official to me. Like when you look at the overall, the refs and the amount of flags that are thrown, many of them needless, unnecessary penalties, Cheffers is at the top. He will be the Super Bowl ref, so keep that in mind for any props that the other books that will offer the flag props in the Super Bowl. Just file that away for next week or in a couple weeks when those get posted. We still have a lot to get to here on the Lombardi Line. We'll get our full breakdowns of each of the conference championship games. Starting next with the NFC, we'll look for some value. Eagles, 49ers, that is next.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM is all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Still a lot for us to get to today on the Lombardi Line. Charlie Goldsmith, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals, will join us at the top of our next hour. Harry Gagnon, our weekly Wednesday guest from the Against All Odds podcast, joins us at about 1:30 on the East Coast here. So we have Mike Pallman for Mike Pritchard, VP of Operations here at Circa. And Mike, hasn't been as much movement on the NFC Championship game as AFC, but original opener for your shop, 1.5, right?
Yep.
San Francisco, Philadelphia, now up to 2.5 pretty much market-wide. Every time the market started to show a little juice, though, on Philadelphia, it still has not quite yet gotten to 3. And I'd certainly, if we get a 3, I'd imagine that will go right back down to the 49ers side, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I don't think it'll get to 3. We opened 1.5. Most places open 2. The money has moved us to 2.5 as well. I think a healthy – we all said last week, and Jalen Hurts will be the key, right? If it's the healthy Jalen Hurts and – what he adds in terms of mobility and to their designed run game makes a ton of difference to this Eagles offense. I like the Eagles in this spot laying less than a touchdown. Dak Prescott did not play well last week. Dak Prescott needed to play as well as he played in Tampa Bay for Dallas to win that game, but he hasn't consistently shown that through the years. But when you go back here and look at San Francisco in this, you know, number 3 overall ranked defense, they've shown some chinks in the armor in the last month here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they gave up over 5 yards per play to some not great teams. They gave it up to David Blau in that Arizona Cardinals game. Geno Smith 5.4 yards per game in that wild card game. They looked their worst against the Raiders. They gave up 7 yards per play. A little better last week. I think the game everybody said Maher would be a factor, the missed extra points. He still was a factor. You're not going to tell me that if he hadn't had those missed extra points issues in Tampa Bay, that McCarthy doesn't try that 53-yard field goal with the, you know, with a minute to go in the half to take a 9-6 lead. McCarthy loves to kick 55, 60-yard field goals. Instead, he passes. They get the first down, but then Pollard breaks his leg. It changed the course of that game as well. So I respect the 49ers. I respect Purdy. Obviously, I'm from Iowa. He went to Iowa State. I watched him play a lot, 46 starts at Ames. And is there a bigger coaching upgrade than Matt Campbell to Kyle Shanahan? I don't know if we could maybe find one
from
college
to
the pros. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to have to make plays. And this Eagles secondary, if not the best, one of the best two or three in the NFL.
No question. It's why I wonder on the total, as it slowly starts to creep up in the market, that could be a very good angle if you're not interested in a side where it opened 45.5. Market up to 46.5. As much as that is true, what you say on San Francisco's defense showing some struggles, Philadelphia's run defense has not been great. 23rd on an EPA per play basis defending the run this year against an offense that's top five in yards per play. You watch the way San Francisco uses their running backs and receivers in different ways to get them involved in the ground game, or just those quick in-breaking routes where, to me, San Francisco isn't going to try to attack the deep secondary areas of Philadelphia. It's all in-breaking routes with them. They've led the league the last 5 years. So it's interesting that it's a total of 46.5, kind of a middle ground type total that easily could be surpassed, especially if you believe Philadelphia has success against the Niner offense.
Yeah, it's an interesting total. I lean myself to unders. Obviously, that's where I start in most sports outside of basketball. But the argument has to be made here about can they exploit the weaknesses. And Philadelphia's run defense is their weakness. Will San Francisco be able to stay ahead of the chains with that creative running game? Obviously, they have a great possession receiver in Kittle, who had the game of his career against Dallas there to keep moving the chains. And so this is going to be a very interesting cat-and-mouse game, I think, from the perspective of how Kyle Shanahan calls this game and how many chances is he actually going to take with Brock Purdy. Now, if they get down two scores, that might loosen them up here. And then, of course, the Eagles might be able to pin their ears back and rush Purdy a little bit more. But the Eagles at full strength, we saw them the first, 7 weeks of the year, they won every first half against the point spread. They're a very quick starting team. It's hard to defend that six-back offense. And they've been in control of most games this year. So it'll be interesting here. I think the team that gets the upper hand and if one team can get a two-score lead, if you can find a prop, something like, you know, if either team gets a 9-point lead or 10, whatever they put it at, will they win the game? I think that's a yes prop in this game.
Okay. That'd be an interesting way to look at it. Yeah. Eagles, I'm seeing about a half-point first-half favorite if you wanted to look that direction. I like San Francisco in the game. As much as the San Francisco defensive struggles are somewhat concerning, considering how they're not even close to being that elite defense of, say, early 2000s Baltimore Ravens or 85 Bears defense. That has been a little bit overblown. However, with how good Philadelphia looked on the ground, it's easy to forget that they were facing a Giants rush defense that was the worst in the league over the final 6 weeks, 30th in the league over the regular season. That step up in class, to me, Mike, you aren't going to see 150 rush yards before contact for Philadelphia this week. I mean, 150 before contact, there were only six different teams who had at least 150 before contact in the regular season and combined into the playoffs. The Eagles accounted for three of those games, and two were against the Giants. So, I had the Giants as the 14th power-rated team in the playoffs for me. I had Minnesota 13th. And we're overblowing this Philadelphia blowout performance over a Giant team that had also been overblown by beating Minnesota. So, it's a bit of an overreaction, at least how I see it with the line going up. And I happily teased San Francisco as soon as it got to 2.5.
Do you have any future bets, Ben?
I do not on San Francisco, no. Mm. But I am using San Francisco in our VSiN playoff survivor. Yes.
Who did you use this past week?
I used Philadelphia this week. Used Cincinnati week one, which is now... So I could be out. And that's the fascinating part of a survivor format here at Circa. It's become incredibly popular with the regular season survivor, and now a lot more people are doing playoff survivor. But it makes for a very interesting mental breakdown, right?
Because we have to save who you think are going to be the Super Bowl teams,
essentially,
right?
Yeah. I mean, we have people in our pool who have used the Chiefs and Bengals already, so they're eliminated because they obviously thought that Buffalo would, they were banking on Buffalo making a run. So now you're screwed if you pick a team early and they end up making a run. So I used San Francisco this week. My plan was to use them in the winner of Kansas City, Buffalo in the Super Bowl, and then just play the other side because to me, San Francisco was the best team left.
Well, you're still very much alive. How many people? How many started? 20 people?
About, yeah. It was not a giant. It was a very exclusive contest, Mike.
And yeah, like the pentathlons. And how many are left?
Now, I want to say there's only been a handful who have been eliminated.
But some are eliminated by they have nobody left.
Right. Some are on the screen are showing as alive, but technically are done. So a couple lost on Minnesota, and a couple had Buffalo this past week, I believe, if memory serves me correct. That's how it broke down.
It's interesting how many people will go through undefeated out of 20. And then you said you're going to chop. You're not doing any tiebreaker Super Bowl total
Very primitive contest. Yeah. Not quite the Circa with over 6,000 people. But a teaser up as well, as much as I could see the game turning into an over-type format, teasing San Francisco to 8.5, that was the most appealing teaser leg I have seen in quite some time, even in a playoffs where it's been that can't-miss teaser leg just about every single week.
Yeah, I can't pull myself to take San Francisco on a teaser here just because of the fact that it could... To me, I think the Eagles will get control of the game. That's my opinion. So I wouldn't tease San Francisco here. I don't know. I think... And the opposite side, you're going to see a lot of Kansas City teasers on the opposite side. So people will look to somebody. Obviously, you're not going to tease the Eagles because they're the favorite. So you might take both dogs, who are very, very good teams. And I can understand getting the two scores.
Right. Would make a lot of sense, at least in that front. The Lane Johnson right tackle piece, any concern for you if you like Philadelphia?
Well, obviously, it's somewhat of a concern. How about the kid that got arrested for San Francisco, too? They haven't made a decision, although he hasn't charged the defensive lineman.
Charles Omenihu, yes.
Yeah, Omenihu with any crime, yes. He was booked on the domestic violence, so... Still waiting for the 49ers official statement on whether he's going to play.
At least injury report, too, for San Francisco. Christian McCaffrey on there with a calf injury. Mitchell, same deal. Well, look, it's not that they won't play. Yeah. It's just McCaffrey didn't do anything last week. How effective are you viewing that was more of a Dallas game plan against him, or is the injury actually a real thing for McCaffrey?
I don't know. I thought that he slammed pretty hard up into the line a couple times when they tried. It didn't look like he was more so maybe in the passing game. Right. With his ability to cut out of the backfield on those routes.
I'm not a believer that he is even most players right now are less than 100%. I'm not a believer that McCaffrey is just insanely compromised right now. And if I did, I would not be betting San Francisco. Okay. So if this does get up to three, I would also take a small piece of Niners three. Although I if it does, Mike, it's probably going to be very brief and it would be juiced. I would think right -120 probably your best chance to get a +3.
Yeah, it might be 125.
Yeah, even maybe that, and then probably back down. So our early thoughts on 49ers, Eagles. We'll do our Bengals and Chiefs entire breakdown in hour number two. We'll mix things up, though. Starting up next, Mike Palm has some hockey he wants to talk about. We'll also get into the college basketball card for tonight. We're going to cover all the sports today. Special edition of the Lombardi Line here on VSiN.
You're listening to the Lombardi Line on VSiN with Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
If you're looking for a betting edge on football's big game, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber with an introductory offer of only $9.99. VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests. Tools like our betting splits, deep dive betting reports, VSiN betting guides for the biggest games of the season, where our experts break down brackets, best bets, and all the big game props. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to sign up for only $9.99. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. Back with Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa, the D, Golden Gate. You guys are ramping up a big Super Bowl party, right?
Big Super Bowl. Here at Circa. Big Super Bowl parties. Well, at the downtown Las Vegas Event Center, we have a 6,000 person outdoor party. We're going to have about 700 people in the ballroom here at Circa, which are going to be invited casino players. We have a retail party at the Detroit Ballroom at the D on the 12th floor. That's around 400 folks. And then obviously we'll have about 400 people here behind us in the book. I think the two end seats in the front row are the only ones that aren't already reserved and deposits put down for, and a couple booths that we hold for bigger players. And then Stadium Swim will be incredible as well. People don't realize, if they haven't been here, that the weather is normally very nice on Super Bowl weekend here. Yeah. It's not, obviously it's not warm, and there's a chance it could be a little cooler, rainy, but generally it's in the 60s, and it's great for an outdoor party.
Yeah, for people listening or watching around the country, we don't mean to make people feel bad. It's just our winter is usually like January, and then...
It was cold for the Rams-Patriots. So I'll say that. Okay. Cold and windy.
Last year was perfect. Yeah. We'll have our full setup again this year. We had the outdoor setup at the stadium swim last year, which was great. And then after that, you go right into March Madness preparations, which is one of the events of the year. And here we are, Mike, under 2 months till Selection Sunday. A lot of teams getting into conference season that started off just guns blazing now find themselves in a tricky bit of their schedule. UConn is one of the prime examples who immediately rose right to the top under head coach and Dan Hurley. And I mean, I look at what's happened over the past few games for UConn. Now 5-5 in the Big East, still laying a pretty sizable number tonight against Xavier, about 6.5 market wide. But how concerned have you been with the recent stretch of form here for the Huskies?
Well, you know, I rely on other, because I don't, until football ends, really start paying attention to college. But I don't bet it on a daily basis, especially not with we're not doing a daily show anymore. And I rely on, you know, guys like Matt Eumanns and Amal Shah. And Amal told me early, it was still November, bet UConn to win the national championship. The team is vastly underrated. And he looked very prophetic as they got off to such a hot start and rose to the top of the rankings. And now some struggles in Big East play. This number seems high to me. I mean, Xavier's 8-1 in the Big East against a team that's 5-5. I would have thought this number would have come back more towards 3.5 than 6.5. We'll see where the market takes it. Probably nowhere near that number, but I certainly couldn't lay this number, even though the game's in stores.
Opened 8, pretty much market wide, and it has been bet down one-way traffic. Keep in mind, the first meeting between the two teams was a few weeks ago. It was New Year's Eve at the Cintas Center in Cincinnati, and Xavier beat UConn as a home dog that day. It is, I'm sure, especially for you, it's got to be odd, you know, as a historian of watching these teams over the decades, to see Sean Miller back at Xavier, second stint. It's like you're being taken in a time capsule back to the mid-2000s.
It's a little bit surprising that he's on the sidelines anywhere with some of the issues he had.
That's another conversation altogether.
He had at Arizona, but there's certainly a lot of energy at Cintas. And he's brought it back there. And this is a very good team. They're ranked 13th. They're probably sitting on a 4 line right now in the bracketology, and can do some damage. We'll see tonight. Can they go into a tough place to play? I know UConn's been very good at home this year.
The thing, on at least Sean Miller, say what you want about, a lot of the things that have happened off the court with recruiting violations, it has not looked good on his, for his legacy, but that guy could coach. I mean, he's turned his Xavier program around basically immediately in year number one. My only concern for the Musketeers going forward, they don't play defense, which is kind of an issue when you get to March, 96th in defensive efficiency. I don't know if does that get exposed tonight against a really sound UConn team on both ends of the floor. I don't know. I would only lean toward the underdog price there with Xavier, but it has that feel, Mike, of a team that probably not ready to make a deep NCAA tournament run yet, and people might talk themselves into the Musketeers.
Yeah, you see it reflected in the total as well, their commitment to defense at 153.5 for a hotly contested conference game. But it starts with recruiting too, Ben, and that's probably where some of his problems come. But he's a very intense guy on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. I think he's a good in-game coach as well, actually. Yeah. He's given a second chance on life here, and let's see what he can do with this program. It's obviously nowhere to go but up.
As Xavier immediately, vaulting into the top 25 this season. Other big news from over the weekend was the Houston Cougars, who just seemed well on their way to running the slate in the American. Upset loss at home to fall out of the number one ranking, Mike. Now third, how do you expect them to bounce back tonight? Going on the road now to take on a pretty pesky UCF team.
Well, if Calvin Sampson didn't have their attention, I think he got it with a loss at the Fertitta Center. I watched that whole game because it was up against the playoffs. And I looked at Temple, who was, I think, up one or down one and a half, and the number was 11 for the game at that point. And it seemed a bit tempting because they were getting good open threes against a pretty good defensive team in Houston. Temple was moving the ball around enough and hanging in there on the offensive glass. Still, until it really got under 3 minutes, did you think, is really Temple really going to pull this upset? It's such a wide-open year, and you follow the sport. I think Alabama's awful good, and they're playing tonight against Mississippi State. But anytime you have Purdue and Matt Painter at the top of the rankings, you can say it's going to be, you can pick 7 or 8 or 10 teams that could win the NCAA tournament this year. No one has been consistently dominant.
That is the big takeaway, really, in the college basketball world this year, at least for Houston, for the majority of the season, has been the number one ranked team and the number one KenPom efficiency defense team. Actually, we're just passed by Tennessee. There's another one. Yeah. If Rick Barnes Rick Barnes' coach team is at the top of a category, that also means there's probably a lot of upheaval this year at least for tonight, Houston bet from an opener of -7 up to -10. You would think with the way Houston plays such a suffocating defense under Kelvin Sampson's scheme that, yes, if he gets their attention with an upset home loss to Temple, it could be a tough night for Johnny Dawkins' Golden Knights. I don't know that I'd want to lay, though, a double-digit price now that it's moved 3 points.
10 on the road is too much, Ben, for me to get involved with. I'm impressed with the fact that Alabama played through this issue with the murder of their teammate. I mean, that's got to be a very troubling thing for the locker room there. The kid, I know he was done for the year, but was still a member of that squad and obviously kicked out of the university. And they didn't miss a beat and picked up and covered again. And I know it's a big number tonight, 13.5 or so. But I'm interested in this Alabama team. I think they're a legitimate Final Four team.
Alabama, before the Temple game Sunday, the only other team who had beaten Houston. Mm-hmm. It was a 71-65. Alabama went into the Fertitta Center. And those sorts of in-season things, it goes one of two ways. You could have what happened in New Mexico State this year. You know, I cover the WAC, do that tournament every season for ESPN Plus here at the Orleans. They had a player, Mike Peake. I mean, he was involved in a shooting incident against New Mexico. It was an off-campus thing. Was sort of catfished to come to a person's dorm. Very ugly situation. New Mexico State did not handle that well. Their coach tried to. He tried to prevent police from properly investigating. New Mexico State has completely fallen off the map. One of the preseason favorites to win the WAC. Yet you have Alabama on the other side who have, they've been able to find their way through it, still play good basketball, and are laying 12.5 tonight against Mississippi State. But you have to consider them a legit Final Four contender.
I really do. And they're going to probably be on the top line here. A very winnable SEC, and they haven't lost yet. 7-0 at the top of the rankings. Obviously, Auburn and Tennessee also in the top 15 there in the SEC. Tell me about Northwestern.
Oh, boy.
Ben, they go to Lincoln tonight, a short road favorite. I mean, they're tied for third in the Big Ten right now.
It's amazing. And think about, too, with all the pandemic era sort of rules and regulations seemingly out the window, well, Northwestern, I mean, their entire team gets COVID. We're all sort of thinking, especially as bettors and as commentators, ready for the season, all right, finally, we don't have to deal with any of this stuff. They were absolutely ravaged, too, and the fact that they're still playing good ball, upset Wisconsin the other night, last night, at home there. It's been really impressive to see what the Wildcats have done. Now laying a short price on the road against Nebraska. That is an interesting spot, though, keep in mind, too, a lot of games.
Turnaround. Quick turnaround.
Right, and a lot of games now jammed in. Yeah, Northwestern.
Wisconsin was Monday night, I think.
Yeah, the Wisconsin-Northwestern game was Monday, yeah.
Yeah.
Beat Wisconsin by 3. hadn't played in 8 days, but that's how it works because, again, they had to cancel a bunch of games for Northwestern at COVID outbreak, trying to reschedule things now. And you take on, Nebraska for all their struggles under Fred Hoiberg. Look, I mean, they've had some pesky results at home. Beat Ohio State, had an upset win there, took out Iowa, who obviously at the time it was an impressive win. I don't know. Iowa's not really fared very well since then.
I know that holds Iowa State back. What's happened to Iowa because of they had that loss. Speaking of Iowa State, how about Otzelberger and the job he's done? Tough number to cover last night, but another good win at Hilton against a Kansas State team that was red hot. And I think there's no question the Big 12 heads and shoulders above every other conference this year.
Huh? You argue it could be the best conference ever. I mean, if it were not for Texas Tech faltering and stumbling out of the blocks 0-7 in Big 12 play. Big 12 going into conference play, no team outside the top 40. Think about that for a second. Every single team in that conference in the top 40.
Yeah. When TCU's up, I mean, it's so deep. And I always argue it's the best conference tournament every year.
It is a good conference.
Yeah, it's always great.
Sprint Center, Kansas City.
Used to be Kemper.
Used to be back in the day. So some rapid-fire college basketball thoughts for you on a Wednesday. We'll get into some of the NHL games Mike has his eye on for tonight when we return to the Lombardi Line.
With Ben Wilson and Mike Pritchard.
Basketball fans can turn a loss into a win with the King of Sportsbooks. Just place a single first basket score prop bet on any NBA game. If your bet loses, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. Wager confidently and take your game to the next level with BetMGM, an authorized gaming partner of the NBA. Just log into your account or download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Then wager on any player to score the first basket in any NBA game. If your bet misses, you'll get up to $25 back in free bets. Turn game time into showtime with BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. As you are in tune with the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. Great to have Mike Palm filling in for Mike Pritchard, Mike Lombardi. Michael back tomorrow along with Patrick Maher as well. And after we do a little roundabout college hoops discussion, Mike, we now turn to your favorite sport. I say your favorite. You bet hockey, though, every day.
Yes, pretty much, I would say my three favorite sports.
Okay.
From a betting perspective, are baseball, hockey, and soccer. So I put it up there with that. And I do bet hockey every day.
Yeah.
I'm happy with my future bets this year.
Boston,
because I always bet Jim Montgomery. Jim Montgomery wins wherever he went. And if he wouldn't have started messing with the owner's wife in Dallas, he might have brought them a championship. But Jim Montgomery goes to Boston, and this team, 35-1 before the year. And I mean, I saw him as low as plus 520 in some markets this week. They come back last night. They give up the first goal mid-second to Montreal. Even covered the puck line. They were a $4 favorite. Covered the puck line $1.30 for Andy McNeil. For all the pro subscribers, he gave out his top play yesterday. It was Bruins puck line tied with 3 minutes to go, but they get the goal in the empty netter to get it done. Another team that I have in my future portfolio is the Dallas Stars, who sit atop the Central Division right now with 64 points. Real good game in Dallas tonight with the Hurricanes. Hurricanes are great. Hurricanes, here's the thing about Carolina. They make you work every night to beat them. If you're going to get 2 points from the Hurricanes, you're going to have to play a good game. They don't give anything away. Interesting game tonight, a pick 'em in Dallas. People forget about Jake Oettinger, how young he is. 24 years old. That team's got a bright future. Good special teams, good penalty kill, good on the power play. I think they're better than they were last year when they couldn't get over the hump in that great 7-game series with the Flames. They're in a good position with the Avalanche obviously down to make some noise in the West this year.
Right. Pick them tonight between you have two division leaders. The Hurricanes tied atop the Metropolitan with the New Jersey Devils, who had yet another heart-stopping come-from-behind win last night. You're shaking your head.
How did the Golden Knights lose that game?
I don't know.
They're good on the road. They were you get $1.50 with them last night. Vanacek had won 9 straight starts. They had him. They come down. They're 2-1, playing very well in the last period, protecting the lead, and then
empty net goal with 30 seconds left.
Yeah,
tie the game.
Devils win. Deflection. It was just a tough beat, and then of course you knew they're going to lose in overtime after what a letdown that was. Yeah. But they did play another good game on the road. From a betting standpoint, with the Knights, fade them at home. They're always overpriced at home and take them on the road. If you've generally followed that formula this year, it's been successful.
Yeah, the Golden Knights have started to struggle a little bit as well after that a red hot start. You think about if we're just looking at kind of general storylines though at the top. I think a lot of people are wondering right now, Colorado Avalanche, your preseason Cup favorites, who have just been. It hasn't been a nightmarish season. They've been solid. They'll be in the playoffs, third right now in the Central Division in the Western Conference, but. Do you really expect them to find a way to turn it around as we get to postseason?
I don't know. They're not generating enough goals. They're just okay, right? They've been an okay team, and that's not what we've come to expect the last 3 years out of the Avalanche, which makes the West very interesting. And the Pacific specifically, I say you fade the Knights to win this division. I don't think the Knights win. Now, who's your alternative? Is it one of the two teams from Alberta? Edmonton still doesn't play enough defense for me. Calgary, something missing there. Obviously, Markstrom hasn't been as good in net. And then we turn to the Seattle Kraken, who host Vancouver tonight. Vancouver off the back-to-back. Vancouver, 5-2 over the Blackhawks. A red-hot Blackhawks team, by the way. That's got to upset the front office. But Vancouver under Rick Tocchet, and shame on that organization for what they did to Bruce Boudreau. We talked about it this morning with Mitch and Paul. Bruce, there it is. I mean, having a guy that knows that he's going to get fired for over a month, and then for a week it's Rick Tocchet, but he's got to wait to get out of his TNT contract, and you're a lame duck coach, and you don't have the guts just to fire the guy, let Mike Yao run the bench for a few games. But anyhow, I digress. It's a back-to-back. You'll see Spencer Martin tonight, I'm sure, in goal for Vancouver because Delia went last night. They only gave up 16 shots to the Blackhawks. They played a very good game last night, and yet they trailed 2-1 at one point in the second period. I think this Kraken team wins the West. You know, for an expansion team, they were competitive. They just didn't score enough goals. They've solved that this year. You've got Grubauer in net. I know it's a pretty heavy price at around $1.70, $1.65. I'm going to take a look at them on the puck line tonight at plus 140 at home. That Seattle crowd, top five crowd in the NHL, and only their second year in existence. It's an amazing atmosphere up there.
And Seattle, as you look at the updated standings right now, like only 2 points behind the Golden Knights, also have three games in hand, though. So
and four games in hand on the Kings, who are between them and the Knights.
Yeah, the Kings 1 point behind the Golden Knights right now. The Kraken, it represents such an interesting dynamic, especially from the betting perspective, where the Golden Knights come in 2017, have this miracle dream season, all those free 500-to-1 tickets given out among all the Las Vegas sportsbooks, and the Knights make the Stanley Cup final. When the Kraken come around last season in the first year, a lot of the consensus was, okay, there's no way that happens again. These things have to take time. Fade the Kraken. And that worked, went way under their projected points total. I remember some books had the Kraken like 40-to-1 to win the cup last year, trying to protect against the whole Golden Knights thought. But now it seems to have evened out, and at least for the Kraken in year two, the adjustments have been made, and now they're not the laughing stock, at least they were briefly in year number one.
Yeah, I don't know that they were a laughing stock. They just, you know, when you only score 2.1 goals per game, it's very tough in today's NHL to win. So the West is very wide open. I don't think you have the strength at the top of the West. I mean, Stars, Winnipeg, Knights, the Kings are up there right now. I mean, who says the Avalanche can't come out of the West again, too?
They have won six straight, so yeah,
wide open. Good win last night over the Capitals, who've struggled on this road trip. The West is wide open. It seems to me all the strength really lies in the East, where you have the Bruins, the Hurricanes. I don't know if the Maple Leafs will ever do anything in the playoffs. Lindy Ruff's got the Devils playing very well. They started out hot. They went through that slump where they lost six or seven in a row. And now they're red hot again. And you know, you can never really count Tampa out. I know they're aging stars and they aren't the team they once were, but they're in the East as well. So I would say when you're looking at props, here are the Bruins, plus 450. Give me the no price. I need Circa to get somebody to bet at Circa a two-way price on that.
Get a no price.
By 35-to-1 and lay $7 on the no or $7.50. Lock it up and not have to worry about a playoffs. You know, Ben, the NHL playoffs are
Totally
non-favorite favoring of anything because the home ice, and you got to win 16 games. It's long and grinding. You see the 8-1s in the NHL 100 times more than you do in the NBA or anything like that with a one seed in the NFL.
It's funny too how you end up with a team like Toronto that gets pigeonholed into that. Okay, good regular season team, always seem to falter in the postseason. You look at them tonight hosting the Rangers, who are also in playoff position. Toronto. Actually, that line's come down a little bit towards the Rangers, about $1.55 to $1.60 consensus favorite right now. Is that a team you look to bet on in the regular season, only to then fade in the postseason, or is there a little more nuance that you go with it?
You know, I very rarely play the side on the Leafs. I more play the totals. I lean over here in this game tonight. You can get even money on over six. The Rangers can put up some goals here. Shesterkin hasn't been quite as dominant as of late. And you know when you go up there and you play in Toronto, you're going to probably have to get three to win. And I'm an under player. But I think this is a decent price on over six tonight.
Especially if you're getting that even money number right now. With the Maple Leafs right now second in their division behind Boston. Heard the ESPN NHL panel last night saying the whole Boston story this year is the most underreported thing in sports. Would you go that far to say that? They have been dominant, but, I mean,
it's still the regular season.
It's the regular season.
They're on a pace where they could set the all-time points record and what was it, 06, 07, Detroit that had the all-time. But, I mean, how are you going to sustain 39, 5, and 4, whatever they are, and only one regulation loss at home? Mm-hmm. I still think, you know, that they've got to get through. I mean, I think an underreported story is how good the Bengals' defense is. I mean, we're gonna talk to the beat reporter, but, I mean, nobody talks about how good this Bengals' defense is, and every other defensive coordinators interviewing for a job, but theirs.
There's a lot of underreported stories. And yes, Lou Anarumo, how is that guy not?
How is he not getting a call?
I mean, the Panthers interviewed like 16 guys, and Lou Anarumo was not one of them for the head coaching position. Ken Dorsey got an interview too. Don't think that looks so good right now. We will get into more of the NFL talk as we get into hour number two. When we return, Charlie Goldsmith, who is a beat reporter talking all things Cincinnati Bengals, will join the show as we get into our breakdowns of the AFC Conference Championship game. How has the line moved And what are the latest injury implications going on in the AFC? That is still to come in hour number two, as well as Harry Gagnon from the Against All Odds podcast. I know Harry's ready to go. He always is with his conference championship plays. We'll have Harry coming up in about a half hour. That is all still next right here on the Lombardi Line.